extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Taquito, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kalen Carr. What's up, boys? Week 3 in the books. We are testing our hypotheses now. We had a lot to say for many months. We were waiting for live soccer. Now we've got it. There's an overload. And maybe we're going to have to revisit some of those predictions. We shall see. Producer Andres has a pretty funny reminder of the day. We've got a big show coming up. We're going to get our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. You know what it's going to be, or do you? There were so many good ones from the weekend. And we're going to go through the narrative fun zone because things are changing. Things are being confirmed. Teams are who they thought we were, are, was. I don't know. I missed on that one. It's fine. Let's get into it. How you guys doing, man? I've been sick for like 4 or 5 days. I've had my in-laws in town. I just now feel like I'm emerging. And it feels good. It feels good.
Wait, were you actually sick or were you faking illness so that you could lay on the couch all weekend and watch MLS? Because let me tell you, I have done that.
That would have worked out pretty well for me. I was sick and then preparing myself for an amazing few days out and about in Kansas City now that I'm fully
vaccinated.
What's
the best animal you saw at the zoo? I love the zoo.
Oh, what's the best animal we saw at the zoo?
It got to be a red panda.
Didn't see any red pandas. I am going to say probably the crocodiles.
Doyle. He went to the Kansas City Zoo. It's like basically pigeons and like maybe a couple dogs.
What are you talking about? You're talking about Central Park here. The Kansas City Zoo is very nice.
The Bronx Zoo is the second largest zoo in America.
Fine, I've been to the, it's a good zoo.
All right, let's talk about soccer.
All right, let's do it.
Can I just say this? I'm coming off my second vaccine shot. I'm a little bit like flu, whatever. So if I say anything ridiculous like that, like Minnesota United's an MLS Cup contender or something like that, just let it go and move on because I'm a bit loopy.
You say don't make a headline out of it. That's what you're trying to tell us. Don't focus on it. Yeah, maybe no screenshots, nothing saved for the entirety of time. Look, check out MLSsoccer.com. Doyle's mega column. Is that fair to call it a mega column, Doyle? I think it took me about 15 minutes to read it, so I think that's pretty mega.
Just trying to make everybody's bathroom time more entertaining. That's my job.
You did a good job of that this morning for me. You can also check out Full Game Highlights MLS YouTube channel. If you don't know where to get them, they're at MLSsoccer.com as well. But if you want to go on the YouTube, you can run through that and watch Extra Time right afterwards. It'll work out pretty well for you. Power Rankings, Twitter Spaces. We're going to do that again on Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern. We do it every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. So check that out. The call-up has Max Bredos. So go listen to the call-up, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and let's get into it. Producer Anders, the reminder of the day is that he is a merciful God, written by Anders, not me, and we have the chance to reverse one preseason prediction now that we've seen 3 weeks of games. What are you reversing? What do you regret?
Hold on. Sorry.
What do you have buyer's remorse
Anders
on?
Anders wrote that he is a merciful God?
He did, yeah.
Dude, you guys can't let him on Spaces anymore. This is you let the guy on Spaces a couple times, and he starts feeling himself. Come on.
I don't think this has anything to do with us. This is all Will Bruin's fault.
I blame Will Bruin and Alex Roldan turning into a rich man Serginho Dest is what I believe Anders called him. Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
So are the Anders Sounders maybe
off the show.
Is that a regret? Is that a prediction that we regret? Because we, you know, Steve Zakuani was here and he was like, look, we didn't get better. Did this team this offseason? I think we all sort of agreed, had some doubts, and they worked over the Galaxy. Now, again, it was sort of like old Galaxy times with the defensive gaps, but maybe there's a regret there. Maybe we were wrong.
I will put my hand up. Yeah, I was completely wrong about the Sounders. I thought they were going to regress pretty hard this year. I think I had them fifth in the Western Conference preseason. I expected they would make a huge midseason signing, as they almost always do, but they're not even set up for that. They're probably going to add one of the Young Money under 22 initiative players, but they're not going to add a new DP. And between that and Ladero being out, like, I was looking at this 3-game schedule. I thought, hey, if they get 2 points, maybe 4 points, they'll be sitting pretty. They've gotten 7 points They've been easily the better team in all three games, and that includes on the road at LAFC, shorthanded LAFC, but still. Brian Schmetzer has we were saying this in the pre-show, man. Like the stuff that I've crushed Brian Schmetzer for in the past, which is like lack of tactical diversity, over reliance on Ladero, not developing young players, not really getting great performances out of his team until the second half of the regular season, for the most part. Like he's answering all of those questions emphatically, and it's resulting in a Sounders team that is not just winning, but they're playing really good, really entertaining soccer that's getting the most out of guys, like veterans like Will Bruin, and obviously Raul Ruiz Diaz has been fantastic. Christian Roldan playing this bizarro central winger role, both full wing backs. Alex Roldan, he's not a rich man Serginho Dest Anders. He's really good. He's really to the point where it's like, oh God, I hope he doesn't, you know, play for Guatemala, because he's going to dime across to Rubio Rabin's head, and those two guys are going to combine for a goal against the U.S. playing for Guatemala. He has been so good. And like, obviously, in any situation where you have players leveling up and looking comfortable and doing that, the players themselves deserve a ton of credit. But there is very clearly something cultural happening here with the Sounders. And like that, I don't want to say it starts with the head coach, but like the head coach probably has the biggest role in that. So Brian Schmetzer has the Sounders team playing fantastic soccer from game one of this season. I was wrong about that. I thought fifth or sixth in the West. They are clearly going to end up being much, much better than that this year.
And of course, Andres was going wild in the group chat. Basically, he said, can't wait to hear about why LAFC is the best team in the league on extra time. Look, Andres, we did you right here. I mean, what else did we see in this game? What did you guys see? I mean, it's a joy to see Christian Roldan. I just kept thinking entry passes. And I was thinking about it in basketball terms, whether it's like finding the guy in the post or a cutter. He is so good at that moment of recognizing where space is and is going to be, and then playing the right weighted ball at the right time and having that sort of like that little pivot. I don't know how to describe it. The receive in one touch and then the ball being released, whether it's to Roldan, whether it's through the lines, whether it's across the box when he does go out wide, as you were saying, Doyle. I mean, he is – we underrated him in our central midfielder discussion. That is for sure.
Yeah,
we missed on that one.
I don't know that we did.
You don't think so?
Has he started as a central midfielder the bulk of his MLS minutes?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
He's gotten slid around.
But I would say more than half of his MLS minutes have come in central midfield.
Okay. I just think it's tough to put a guy in the top five at a position if they're playing.
He doesn't play there every week. That's fair. That's fair. But it's also like he's playing as a number 10. In a completely bizarre kind of way, because Weeby's right. Like, he's very good at those one touch passes and understanding where space is. But it's also with Christian Roldan, it's less about his passing and it's more about his movement.
Yeah,
his movement off the ball is devastating, and it just opens up so much space for these other guys. And like, huge credit to Brian Schmetzer here, because first of all, João Paulo as the regista, but then Josh Atencio. His ability to get on the ball and set tempo and distribute and find these you know, really telling passes. He goes out, you just plug Kellen Rowe in there, and he plays one of the best games Kellen Rowe has played since 2017. Like, there is something going on here that is team-wide. And when that happens, it's like, bravo for the coach.
And I think part of it for Seattle is they value experience, right? And
but
so
it's
like
not just experience. It's Atencio. Leyva looked great last night. And granted, it's a late second half cameo, but like, these are the teenagers, and we used to crush Seattle for not developing these guys.
100%. But also, how much easier is Josh Atencio's life when he comes in and he's playing alongside Christian Roldan and João Paulo?
Sure.
And in front of Yaimar or Arriaga and behind Raul Ruiz Diaz. Like, they created an environment where they value experience. They value MLS experience as well. That's one of the teams that consistently in the offseason they bring in guys like Kellen Rowe, who have been in this league, who understand the league, rather than always trying to find someone from outside to come in and be this spark and be special. And then I think it makes it easier for those young guys to step into those big spots.
Shane O'Neill would be one of those. If you hear a lot of noise, background noise here, it sounds like Godzilla's on top of me. That Godzilla is about 3 years old and has hit a point in his life where he doesn't listen to directions anymore. Anders did this perfectly. I was going to start this show with RSL, and somehow we went on a riff about the Seattle Sounders. I'm going to throw mine out here. I think I said LAFC for the Shield and MLS Cup. I think I said Carlos Vela for MVP. I think he could still win MVP. I think I regret saying Shield, because I think there was just a little bit too much going on with them as far as, like, one, the health of Vela and Rossi, but also what was going to happen with the third DP spot. I'm not sure the Shield was a smart prediction on my part, also because I'm not sure Bob Rowden is going to look at that as his ultimate goal and sacrifice anything to get that. I think he will be more worried about, like, midsummer on than he is about the entirety of the year and being excellent for that entire time. And he may not have a choice because Carlos Vela hasn't been around. Diego Rossi doesn't look like Diego Rossi yet. And that third DP spot is not filled. And you're shuffling forwards in and out, in and out, in and out. Still like the midfield, still like the back line, like they have a goalkeeper that they've settled on. But I don't think Supporters Shield is my best work, let's say, and historically poor work when it comes to predictions.
So, like Doyle, I had Seattle fifth in the West. Besides that, I still like my standards.
Oh,
this is a good moment for us to take in. I still feel really good about most of the things that I said and picked. Some of the player ones, I had Tim Melia for goalkeeper of the year. I don't think he's played yet. So that'll seem a little bit rougher. But from team ones, I feel good. I know where I'm at.
How you feeling, Kaelin? You racking your brain here? Trying to go through the depths?
Well, I was concerned about Seattle with Jordan Morris just because I think he's that important of a player for them. And at times when Seattle hasn't had him, they've looked... They haven't had that sort of threat in behind, or they haven't been able to use the wings, and it's looked a little bit slow or plodding. And the way that Schmetzer has set up the team, actually, if you look at the goals, just still coming down that left flank. And Smith, I know, has got on, you know, the end of things, got a goal, got an assist, but the way that they've been able to use him has been really good, because they kind of use Will Bruin as somebody that kind of can tuck underneath, hold it, then he can spin and turn, and then they find Rui Diaz. But they still use both of those outside fullbacks bomb forward. I believe on one of the goals, they were the two sort of furthest up the pitch. Yep. to knock it in for Smith's goal. So that's been impressive. I have to say, I still don't think Seattle is the best team or going to be the best team in MLS. I wouldn't jump off the LAFC train this early. I just feel
I'm still there for Cup, baby, and I'm maybe there for Vela MVP, but I'm not there for Supporters Shield anymore.
Okay, so I'm still hanging on to Supporters Shield because I picked them for that. I'm still hanging on for that. I guess my bigger question, if I'm going to sort of do a take back already an early, I think I may have been wrong here, was on Minnesota United, and I think we all had them rated really highly, right? Yep. I don't want to get into their preseason ranking.
Wow, drag us all in here, huh? You had regrets, but you should all have regrets. We were all wrong.
But they you know, have not looked good at home, especially. They just lack. I think they lack some mobility. They haven't been dynamic at all. Losing Molino has really been tough, but Bello comes out. He hasn't quite looked up to his sort of standards. He's looked kind of like searching for partners or partnerships. Abila comes in and he just didn't really have that sort of dynamic movement. It didn't look fully fit even. And it just didn't look great. I guess the bright spot was the 17-year-old Wea coming on and like mixing it up and getting a couple chances, but you can't really rely on that right now. So the question is, like, how are they going to get goals right now? I think they're still going to be a tough team to play against. I don't know if something was up with Gregus. He didn't go from the start. They went with kind of a dual six with Will Trapp and Alonso next to each other, but and then kind of weaponized Sasani Dotson up front, where he was allowed to kind of roam and move, but it just didn't really connect.
Is that
the
word you'd use for what happened with Hasani Dotson?
Well, they give him more of a free roll to kind of like sprint and run and try and create something either off the a turnover, or if he wants to go wide, he can. But it just, you know, it just sort of defaulted to Metiner just constantly going and just trying to serve sort of hopeful balls into the box. And a couple of times, there was a couple moments where he's, you know, Metiner's a good player, has good service. But it's just kind of a one-trick pony right now, and just they just haven't been able to create opportunities in the way that I thought they would coming into the season. And the loss of Kevin Molino, Robin Ludd was out in this one as well, too. But it's starting to kind of like one bad result to the next, to the next. And there's a little bit of a crisis of confidence happening right now in Minnesota.
They chased this game at home against an expansion team for 75 minutes. 75 minutes at home against an expansion team. They created one good chance, which was McMaster, who's a rookie, to Wea, who's 17 years old, and one half chance, which was just Bibello being magic. And that was it. Like, even playing with desperation, they had nothing. And it's a bunch of stuff. You know, I just watching the games, I kind of followed my nose and looked through the numbers. One of the things that Minnesota was really good at last year was taking space, because they have actually a lot of good passers of the ball in that back line. And obviously when Gregus is in there in central midfield and Ozzie, they can move you around with the ball and open up space and then get their wingers in particular into positions to go 1v1. And so they had the third most attempted dribbles last year, and they were top 8 or 9 in success rate. Down the stretch, they moved into the playoffs. They were in, like, I think, 4th in dribble success rate. So they would use their possession to open the field up, create 1v1s, and that Molino especially was devastating. This year, they are 24th in dribble success rate. They're still 3rd in the league in attempted dribbles per 90, but they are 24th in success rate. So they're not dynamic on the ball in any possible way. And part of it is in central midfield. Like, Will Trapp is not going to beat anybody off the dribble. Ozzie has really looked his age this year. Ozzie used to be so great at that little turn and dip the shoulder and then push the ball forward. He has not done that. That's not Gregus' game. So there's no dynamism from that group in central midfield. And then Ethan Findlay's not a beat you off the dribble guy, though he's trying it a lot this year. It shows that he understands what's missing and he's trying to do the job. Ludd is not a beat guys off the dribble guy. McMaster might be, but we haven't, he's a rookie. So it seemed like just one thing was missing, but missing that one thing has had a cascading effect, and the whole attack has stalled out because of it. And I honestly think that's a much bigger issue for this team than the defense, which I'm convinced is going to end up being pretty decent. But one of the solutions for Minnesota United, you got to start Hassani Dotson as an 8 next week, whether it's next to Alonso or Trapp. Yeah, because he is dynamic on the ball when attacking from deeper. He's not dynamic as a winger. He's not going to square up against the fullback and just, you know, completely wash the guy. But if you get him on the ball in the course of your buildup patterns and you give him a little gap, and so he will hit that gap with the ball, and that puts pressure on the defense. And then suddenly you have something beyond just giving the ball to Bibello and hoping he can be magic.
And the other thing is, Reynoso is so isolated. And so he can't use pieces. And he can beat guys 1v1, but that's not most of his game. And he has no one around him to work a quick 1-2 off of and to pull defenders in and to manipulate the play.
I mean, the one time he did, he almost scored the goal of the year. That was incredible. But
and Dotson could give him some of that.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Dotson is, it's one of those you're watching him play and you feel bad because you're asking him to scale from college soccer to professional soccer. He does that. Now you throw him in a place where he's completely uncomfortable. He's not a good decision maker in the final third, especially from the space he's coming from. And there was a few half buildups that kind of died at his feet because he waits too long to make the decision or kind of lets the defense sort of figure it out. And then I think he took a long shot on one that should have been a much more dangerous moment. It's not what he does. It's not his position. He's not comfortable either. And so right now, if you're hurting, why would you not, as Doyle says, slide him back in, give Reynoso a little bit more help to work off of in that midfield and bring some energy into that midfield? I mean, the game got spread out and Austin just looked so happy to work through it and to knock the ball around and to create opportunities. And it was just too easy for them throughout a chunk of that game.
It's Diego Fagundes' world. We're just living in it right now. You know, the Minnesota United fan getting hit in the face with the ball is basically their season so far. 3 games, 3 losses. How much concern? We had this conversation already. We've done it. Is there more mounting concern? Does this make you more concerned that maybe those preseason predictions from us weren't quite as spot on and weren't quite as indicative of who this team was or was going to become? Or is this still just small fixes away, Doyle, Dave, Kalen, any of us, from what we expected.
I think most of it can be fixed. They have huge pieces that aren't available. I think Kalen made the point, though, that as each loss builds on itself, that's the most worrying thing. To me, most of what's worrying with this becomes psychological and emotional the longer it goes on. You got a DP center forward that hasn't even arrived yet. You've got center backs not taking out Ike again, who aren't available. You've got pieces that will make this team better already available to you. Plus, it sounds like another winger who will fit into sort of what Doyle talked about, if it's Frangipane or someone like that. But the longer this goes on, you start... Did I say it wrong? It's Frangipane.
Frangipane?
That's how they say it in Great British Bake Off.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like some sort of like custard or tart with like, oh, you know, apricots in it. I mean, that was well done. That was well done.
That's the only fear for me, is that they get so deep mentally and as a group that however good they get, they're already falling off.
I worry about Molino being gone, and I know that he's been injured or he's out, and we haven't seen him for Columbus yet. But when you think back to the best moments of this team down the stretch in the playoffs, the way he combined with Bello, I just feel like sometimes one player can make a massive, massive difference in the way that it was Intalud, back to Babello, going here. They even made Ethan Finley a better player because he just, you know, they had these tight, intricate combinations, so then Finley can stretch him behind. And I think when you take one piece out, sometimes you can kind of, you can kind of see, like Doyle said, a cascading effect, or just the dominoes begin to fall. So I actually have some real concerns about how this all fits together.
I still think they're a playoff team.
So do I.
But I had them second or third in the West. I think it's going to take them half a season to figure that out. So probably closer to the tail end of the playoffs. So
they go to Colorado this weekend. Colorado got a win against Vancouver.
5-0 win this weekend for Minnesota.
Aiden, he's like, yes, yes.
I'm back. Oh, you feel
I'm getting energy from you. I'm stirring.
But now you just said guaranteed 5-0 win for Minnesota.
Yeah. So
Agent Huth, he does the opposite of whatever we say on this show. So that means 5-0 loss for the Loons.
Everyone invest in Andre Shinashiki's shot. Stop right now.
I was going to say, just let Diego Rubio take 5 free kicks, see if he can put them all upper corner, and he might be on to one there. Let's hit our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. We're going to do this every single Monday. So if you see something, let us know, something you like that made you laugh, that was funny. This does not have to be serious, though it can be. It could be Ryan Hollingshead trying to punk Gio Savarese with the fake throw. Have you ever wanted to do this, Kalen? Have you ever picked up a ball in the corner and you have the opposing coach right there? He's probably been yapping a ton and you've been having to hear him. And you're like, I'm just going to, even though this is off the field of play and clearly I can't actually throw the ball this way, I'm going to just pump fake it right at him. Just, what are you doing, Gio?
No chance. What happens when you become a free agent and finally qualify for free agency? You need a squad. I mean, you got to play the long game here. Or, you know, post-career, you need an interview. Maybe you're doing sideline. I don't know. I think.
See, that tells me that he's got personality, Kalen. I like that. I like that edge. Yeah.
All right, let's get him on extra time.
I would have well, we've had him on extra time. I would have chosen someone other than Gio. I enjoy Gio, like Gio a lot. Gio intimidates me greatly.
Didn't flinch.
Yeah, didn't even move. Didn't even blink.
Ryan Hollingshead got hit by a car and shook it off. I don't think he's going to be intimidated by Gio or anyone else in MLS.
To be fair, what's more intimidating, a car or Gio Savarese angry?
Like a car.
I don't know, man. I don't know. We don't know how fast that car was going. We could also go with San Jose's Celebration Bridge. Did you see this?
That was cool.
It used to be that they had to walk on the concourse and they'd have to like stop the concourse, you remember? I remember the All-Star game. You had like Didier Drogba walking through this like crazy fan area, and Arsenal are going through the Arsene Wenger. And now they've built a bridge, and they're throwing their jerseys off of it. It's pretty dope.
Dude, I've got the celebration from San Jose, and we'll get to Cade Cal. But the celebration for me was in the 83rd minute. They're up 3-1, and Marcinkowski tries to play sort of a split ball in his own box, and it immediately gets picked off. He dives out. There's an open net. Florian Jungwirth comes, makes a sliding tackle to, like, you know, knock the ball out. And he gets up and goes full Cristiano Ronaldo, like celebration in the air, fist pump. And I'm like, y'all were playing 5v2 in the box, gave up an open net. You're winning 3-1 at home. Like, what? And he's fully celebrating. Like, he just scored like an amazing goal. It was a great save, but I was a little bit just like, oh, San Jose, the risks that they take is just wild to me still.
That never would have flown for the 2011 Dynamo.
I was going to say.
Never would have been.
Bobby Boswell, somewhere in Houston, Bobby Boswell just bolted up in bed and was like, I don't know what just happened, but I've been shaken to the core by this.
I don't know if Bobby could have got the height on that leap from, but shout out to Bobby.
Yeah, shout out.
Wow, Caleb really just went back. Yeah.
Ooh, little stray for Bobby Boswell here.
And he would have dribbled out.
This has got to be the celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. A new tradition is born. David Ochoa will take your fine. He will pay that fine in exchange for 3 points. And then he will boot the ball into his own stands in Utah after a win against Sporting Kansas City to send an RSL fan home with his John Hancock on that ball. This is an amazing thing. I still want to know, any of our listeners, were you in Minnesota? That ball had to landed somewhere. Did you pick that ball up? Do you have that souvenir?
I think the dude that did get hit in Minnesota on the Bibello shot, he took that one square to the grill.
They were right to be very afraid of.
Those shots
flying into the stands.
Everyone knows David Ochoa is a huge Roger Federer fan. He sees the tennis players, they sign the ball, they loft it into the crowd. It's a tradition. He wants to be a part of that. Duh. That's all happening.
I adore the pettiness from RSL. So much, like after how big a thing Adrian Heath and a Minnesota fan base made out of that the previous week to come, first of all, to play as well as they did in that comeback win over Sporting Kansas City, where RSL were the far superior team and they didn't do it by like grit and grind. They played real pretty soccer. But then to celebrate by punting the ball into the stands, like it's just
If you want to really take it up a notch, write "not that good" on the ball.
Yeah, I was gonna say something like, you know, "has edge David Ochoa" or something like that. I mean, for the whole club to get behind it, it's one of those wonderful only in MLS moments. But let's get into the result. They're I probably said it like 15 times last week. LA Galaxy, the only team with all, you know, 6 points from their 2 games, the only team with all wins. And then this weekend, I'm pretty sure on the broadcast on FS1 or wherever that game was on, they said the same thing, and RSL was just like, yo, what's up. I had Nick Raimondo in my Twitter mentions bringing up our power rankings ratings because I promoted the fact that next Friday's Viernes de Football is RSL San Jose, which is a gift of all gifts.
Stay out of those power rankings, man.
Yeah, the every team that ends up at the bottom of the power rankings inevitably wins the next week. But anyway, they used the ball. And that was the big difference between what we saw from RSL this game and what we saw from them basically all of the last two seasons. The last two seasons, RSL were just compact and they would try to make it hard on you. And they would just rely upon Rusnak and Krylock to do something wonderful to score. And that was about it. They didn't have much beyond that. But if you go back and you watch this game, or even better yet, click into my column because I did a big breakdown on it. Like there are each of the first two goals, you could see RSL knocking the ball around in order to pull Sporting Kansas City apart and create gaps for the back line to play directly into Pablo Ruiz, who is their wonderful little central midfielder. And he always had so much room because the way Sporting Kansas City play, when Ilie is the defensive midfielder, he just sits in front of the back line. He doesn't actually come up in pressure. So if you can eliminate that front line or first two midfielders in the 4-3-3 Sporting Kansas City play, you're going to have time to turn and pick meaningful passes upfield. And that was the story on each of those first two goals. It was really the story of the game. They were, you know, getting great width from their fullback, well, especially the right back, which is a nice story. Andrew Brody, who has, you know, been part of RSL in one form or another for like 10 years and made his MLS debut in this one after Aaron Herrera had to limp off injured. It looked like the crew. is what it looked like. They looked like the Columbus Crew in this game when the Crew are going really well and getting Harrison Awful up one side and, you know, Valenzuela up the other, and like just finding these devastating little combinations of play from the back to central midfield back again to shift the opposition around and then get into their final third kill patterns. That did not exist for RSL last year. We did not see that, I don't think, even once. And in this game, they absolutely buried Sporting Kansas City with it.
Yeah, they were fun to watch. I love Ruiz. He wants to be on the ball. He's fun to watch. He wants to connect. He wants the game to move. And credit to Rubio Rubin. It's been a really long few years for him. It was like kind of awesome to see points at the back of the jersey on all the goals. There's four or five KC players who could have done better on his second goal, but we don't have to focus on that. We can focus on him. So like that's cool to see. And I think we talked about in preseason that could be an identity for this club, is like a place for players to rehab their career where you know they have ability. It hasn't gone well for a multitude of reasons, whether it's health or other things. And this could be an opportunity where they could be one of those clubs. And we've seen clubs around the world be successful at this, at being one of those places. But you have to have a structure in place to help those players come into and be successful. And it feels like there's a spine to this team. It's a young spine outside of Silva. But they were confident there. And Krylak, wherever he plays. But they were confident. They were comfortable throughout this game. And I think Freddie Juarez, like said in post game, talked about the halftime locker room and what they said. And they felt like they were good enough to win that game. It was just about being quicker and finding those gaps and being a little bit more aggressive. And that's good confidence for a team that went down 1-0. Pulido scores. You start to feel KC get confident. And they rebounded pretty quickly and started to build and build and build throughout that game. And it was a really good performance from them top to bottom.
Bobby Wood is one of those guys. Hasn't played much. Coming to RSL in the summer, I think July 1st. In the meantime, Rubio Rubin, feast. Feast.
I mean, Bobby Wood is going to be available sooner than that.
You think so?
Yeah, because he officially ended his contract in Germany. So as soon, I think his wife was heavily pregnant. And
in Denver. So
heavily pregnant, huh?
Wait, I mean, I don't know what the terminology is. Right now. Yeah. Super pregnant. She's expecting any day now. So they waiting for the birth of a child and then, whatever quarantine issues there are. So he's going to be available really soon. But, like, he's not going to get into the lineup ahead of Rubio Rubin. Dude has 2 goals, 2 assists in 2 games. He's been awesome. And it's been – I'm with David. Like, I love that identity for RSL to sort of rehab guys who, for one reason or another, clearly talented but have become journeymen. And, like, a potentially wonderful story there.
And we haven't mentioned it. Jeff Carlisle reported last week that they're apparently pretty deep in talks with a winger from Independiente who they think could help bring a little bit more danger to this group. I'm also throwing out there that they should probably trade for Danny Royer. I'm shopping Danny Royer. I don't have any stake in the game. I'm just here to watch him score goals in MLS. And that could be another interesting piece for them. But they've got 80 options. And I think Dunny was talking with the guys in the SKC broadcast about how Anderson Julio they wanted like 3 years ago. And he chose to go to Mexico. And now they got him for cheaper.
I thought Houston the place you're supposed to go if you're trying to grab vets looking for a second go of things. RSL's trying to take it.
It's too hot, man. It's too hot in Houston. What are you going to throw vets in?
Yeah, nice little cool mountain air. Like, where are you trying to train? I'm trying to train in Sandy. Maybe
one of my buddies moved to Utah last year, and like he's a skier, and like his Instagram is just incredible, man. I
think we should probably take extra time to Utah. We've done it before. We're
waiting for Doyle to win the lotto so that then we could take over RSL and manage it.
Exactly.
That.
They need an owner. The true meme team. True meme team. David Ochoa got the kick this ball. Should he kick all the balls when they win, or should it be like the man of the match signs the ball and kicks it? Like, how do we – I mean, they'll set their own tradition. We'll let them do that. These are just the questions that I think about. Is it Ochoa every time, or is that that ship has sort of sailed now?
Wait a minute, Weeby, best 11 of MLS traditions.
Oh.
There's a column for the week, buddy.
It writes itself. This is clearly the starting goalkeeper, no doubt about that.
100%.
All right, let's get into my narrative fun zone. We've already done the Seattle and 3 L's for Minnesota narratives. How about no wins in 3 home games for Nashville SC? Dax McCarty came out and said, look, I'm just going to say it. It's important that we say what's really going on here, and what's really going on is that this isn't acceptable for us. They had really won the expected goals battle heading into this weekend, and then, of course, no goals for anybody against Inter Miami. Also, no Higuain's. Again, condolences to the brothers for the death of their mother. Awful, awful stuff. We hope they and their family are mourning together and being together in this time. But Nashville, this is not... there's a little bit of Minnesota to this in the East. Maybe less lofty expectations, but certainly higher expectations than this from a result perspective.
They're playing better. It's weird because they're the opposite team of last year in a couple of ways. So, like, they're playing really good soccer in a lot of facets, especially attacking, generating high quality chances. So that's different than most of last year. They are soft as hell in the first 15 minutes of games. They're just like letting the opponents set the tone 3 weeks in a row now. They were very lucky not to go down at least a goal in this one, even against a shorthanded Inter Miami team. They never let teams do that last year. They would get beat on talent, but they would win the effort battle week after week after week from the kick. So that's opposite of last year. The place where they're the same as last year is like their DPs might just not be good enough. Like
They're generating chances. Charlie said on Thursday, and I was like, you can't be this harsh, but they generate chances, and Cadiz and Mukhtar can't finish them. That's like the story of a lot of what's happened. I'm wondering how much was game states the first 2 weeks where they went down 2-0 and then they had to go for it, because now you have a game here where you play it out 0-0 and they don't create as many opportunities, and they weren't as dangerous as we've seen the first 2 weeks, but maybe that's also an overcorrection because they felt like they were giving up soft goals, whatever it is. But I do wonder what the ceiling is then on, well, we want to be a more dangerous attacking team, but these are the pieces that we've built in.
So I asked Second Spectrum to look into their chance creation from the first 2 weeks. And what they came back with to me was, of course, this massive uptick in basically everything. But the biggest one was in crosses. Mm-hmm. And they were saying
Daniel Lovitz.
Going down the left side. In particular, they were saying what they were seeing is that game states were affecting chance creation. That FC Cincinnati got up, Montreal got up, and then both of them were like, whoop, sit back. Now, that's not all negative. It's not all just like 12 crosses a game, whip it into the box. They were also creating a lot more on sort of the counter press and on high press. Again, that could be game states. That could be Minnesota and FC Cincinnati unable to play out of their own end and just pushed back. But there are some...
Maybe he's just dunking on Minnesota. They didn't even play.
Oh, I said Minnesota?
And he still mentioned
Minnesota.
Hey, man, Minnesota.
Look, you know, teams that don't have wins, they all just go together for me at this point.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's an open question. And for them, it is about, ultimately, the results. Like, they needed to do both. They need to be a better attacking team, but keep the results and improve on them. That's what this is all about for them, and it just hasn't happened yet. And it's happened 3 games at home against opponents. If you were going to be the team that you said you wanted to be, that you would handle.
Yeah.
Montreal, Cincinnati, Inter Miami with the Higuain brothers. I mean, come on.
Yeah, there was no Robbie Robinson was on the bench. No Pizarro. I think he had a visa issue or something. And then,
Miami played with half their usual contingent of DPs. They only had 2 on the field.
Wow.
Is Shawcross not a DP?
Who knows?
He's just a lad.
But that's a game that you're like, that's where you expect in Nashville to progress, right? And I felt like they did so well that in the season. I'm a little less concerned about them because I've long felt that their strength is going to be in their it's a Gary Smith team. It's solid defensively. They know how to win. They know how to, they make it hard. But that next step, and you're talking about that finishing and that top end quality, that was what was going to be needed to go, you know, they made a good run in the playoffs, but to take that next step or to come back this year and do it in 3 games at home too, you'd expect to see a lot more out of them. But I think they're going to bounce back just because I still think they're a solid team, but they need to get it going in the attack.
Two things that could be interesting. One is Rodrigo Peña. I think we've only seen 1 minute of him.
Pinheiro?
So far, he's... What?
Rodrigo
Peña. Yeah. I think he's played 1 minute or something like that. So we haven't seen much of the one attacker they brought in from outside the league who could be a difference. The other thing that you could see them do to generate attack or maybe change the way they play is bring Mukhtar in even deeper and add another attacker on the field because he has played central midfield in his career in other places. Now, Godoy and Dak seem to be untouchable in this team. I think part of them being soft the first 15 minutes has been those two have started slow. You watch the first 15 minutes of the first two games of the season, and it took Godoy a while to get involved. Dax gave away some passes you don't expect. So that could be something they could try. The other thing is, go back to what you did last year, sit deeper and try and hit in transition. Don't try and create chances in the final third with more pieces higher up the field if it doesn't work for you.
I get what you're saying, but like, I think that lowers their ceiling. Because at this
point, but right now the floor is pretty low.
I don't know if the floor is that low.
Three home games they haven't won.
They're hosting New England at home this weekend, by the way. So that's another difficult one.
Games they haven't won.
Yeah. I understand, but I feel like we're seeing the floor. Like, they are playing better soccer. They are getting into better positions. I know they're crossing a lot, Weeby. You're right to point that out, but they're also creating many more high leverage, well worked chances than last year, at basically any point. Cadiz and Mukhtar just aren't finishing enough of them. And neither are Dom Baji or CJ Sapong. They've both gotten onto the field recently. I think all of this gets fixed if they just play hard from the whistle. I generally think that Nashville is going to be okay. I still think they're probably a playoff team in the East.
The Chicharito train slowed down. Let's say he got his foot stomped in this game against Seattle. We didn't really talk about that. We mostly focused on the Sounders. He had his foot stomped, and it seemed to me like he was trying to shake that thing off like the whole game after that. Was kind of shaking it, was ginger on it. LA Galaxy, LAFC this weekend. This is the ultimate narrative in the fun zone. 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Big Fox. This is the game that both clubs look forward to at this point. Will we see Carlos Vela in it, and what version of Chicharito will we see? What did we learn about the Galaxy in this match? It had been a fairy tale for them. At some point, the slipper was going to come off a little bit. It came off. But it's still 6 points from 3. It's still 5 goals from Chicharito.
I do appreciate, Weeby, that you went to, page 42 on the PR manual of Chicharito didn't score. But no, he got his foot stomped.
I'm just saying, if you need a reason to look for it, that it was very ginger. It was like, I think Yaimar landed on that from like 6 feet. I don't know anybody in the world that could recover from that and potentially score goals and lift the Galaxy to victory. So the shrine is still intact. I think he's going to be fine. We lit another candle for him. What was this weekend for the LA teams? Because it's a 1-1 draw for LAFC, sans Vela as well.
It was coming back down to earth, I think. I think the question was to say, okay, well, yeah, they had two good results, which were great. Chicharito's flying. But they still needed a hat trick in one and two in the other for them to get a result. And that's because there's problems in the back. And O'Neill Fisher got turned around quite a bit. The connection between him and Araujo was wrong all game. Didn't know when to step. They got suckered way too far over at times, leaving the back post wide open. I think there's real issues in the back, and that's not something that's just going to sort of disappear. I think it kind of maybe got paved over a little bit. But they're still good in the attack, and there were still opportunities for Chicharito. They were still Vasquez is good on the ball. Efra had some nice balls in behind. Goodseer, is that how you
pronounce it?
Grandseer. There you go. He had like a moment where he was able to show a little bit of maybe some burst to get in behind or stretch the field. And so I think there are a lot of things that are moving forward for them in a positive direction, but still some issues in the back as far as just being solid. Not making easy mistakes and tracking runners. I think some pretty basic stuff that you would expect a team like coached by Vanny to sort out. Question about personnel. Do they have that top end center back maybe to when one of the outside backs gets burnt that they can leave the center and go and put out a fire? Question mark still there for me, but I think it was coming down to earth to say, yeah, this is like a better, much improved team. They still have some weapons in the attack. They got Chicharito going, but still some holes that are going to take some time to fix.
We'll see what Kevin Cabral could fix. Can we just talk about the hole for LAFC with Carlos Vela? Out again. 1-1 draw against Houston. Rossi is back. That's great news. Rossi was not sharp. That's understandable. Is there any concern about LAFC? I mean, I'm not concerned, but I'm jumping off the support.
I'm jumping off the supporters' shield train.
Like that's a one club train. You got to have a lot of faith. Full season. it just sort of feels like right now, if you're juggling issues with Carlos Vela, that is going to have a big trickle-down effect on your ability to be the best team in the league over the course of an entire season.
That is the only concern I have for LAFC is the status of Vela, because it's weird that he clearly wanted to come back on after that injury in week one, and, you know, to the point where Bob was kind of apologizing on national TV for it. And now, according to reports, he hasn't trained in 2 weeks, and he had, like, we haven't heard anything definitive on what's going on. Maybe, like, apparently the injury was worse than Vela thought on the day. It's weird to say, but, like, you hope it's that and not something personal. Like, hopefully some bond, there wasn't a bond broken between Bob and Vela. And he's, like, disgruntled now. That is my only concern for LAFC. And the big difference between LAFC this year and last year is this year, when they play kind of crappy, which was the case against Houston, and Houston deserves a lot of credit for that. Houston's very difficult to play against. They have a good enough goalkeeper and good enough spine, specifically that central defense, to still get points. Last year, LAFC would have lost this game 3-1. There would have been a goalkeeper error, and they would have gotten beat on a set piece. But with Murillo and Segura, with Cisniega clearly having leveled up, and Atuesta healthy from the jump, they are in perfectly good shape to just gut out some wins, even when they're missing, you know, most of their starting front line, a couple of fullbacks, whatever else.
I just think what you saw from Bob in the first week subbing off Vela quickly is what they learned from last year, which was they can get through games without him. They can't get through the season without him. And so that's probably what we're still seeing. Obviously, there was reports coming out of LA, I think, last week about Vela maybe being interested in returning to La Liga. So maybe there is some off-field stuff that's going on, which is getting in the way of all this. But a week two where you still pick up points without Vela is worth it to make a Supporters Shield run, which is you need Vela healthy for this, you know, the long part of the season. And that's the biggest focus for this club. And I think that's what you learned last year is the we want to win every game. That doesn't mean Vela has to be on the field to do that. It's almost better for your team to think that way by knowing when to hold.
And that's why I think I'm pulling out of the Supporters Shield side. I am team. If Carlos Vela even thinks that there might be a little bit of tightness, like he dreamed last night that he was going to pull his quad, you don't play him. Like, they should kid gloves Carlos Vela throughout the entire season, because they are good enough to be a playoff team and a top half of the West playoff team probably as well, especially once Diego Rossi is back and they're in rhythm a little bit more. But you cannot risk him. You can't do it. But it also lowers your ceiling in the meantime.
I feel like we should do that with Kalen with ETR.
We are doing that.
Like Kalen's hamstrings are tight after men's league this week. You could take the rest of the show off. We completely understand if you need an early sub.
I've never had a coach pull me like be like, oh, immediately yank him. It's like, you're good, right? You're good.
Gonna have to play through this.
Yeah.
Still Kalen's our Barco. He's just gonna walk off the field and leave us at some point late in the game.
Yeah, I was like, five subs? How's this happening?
You have five subs.
Yeah. I understand the feeling there of you gotta protect your asset, or you got to protect Vela. But I think there's a line where it's like, at some point you have to understand that there's risk involved. Right. And as a star player too, that's where the miscommunication came in, where it's like, you see it happen in all sports where the star players, and I was joking about myself and being thrown out there, but that's real. And the star players get a little bit, if it's another minute, if it's another 2 minutes, if it's another 4 minutes, you get a little more time to test it out and see how you're feeling. And I think that's where the frustration came in. And we've seen him like with that quick trigger, because yes, he is so valuable. And we see what a difference he makes, you know, in the CONCACAF Champions League run at the end of last year compared to what LAFC looked like earlier in the season. And so I think you have to kind of always play that dance, but you also have to keep him happy. And you have to make sure that he feels that, you know, the decision is not taken out of his hands, and he has a say in it too, because he knows his body, he knows where he's at, and there's times where it's a knock and there's a time where it's an injury. And you know, I've actually, you know, their staff is incredible. Their medical staff is really, really top notch. But it also, you know, it's partly up to the player too. So I hope that we see him back, because we haven't quite seen that Chicharito in form, especially in form Chicharito, or this new look Galaxy with Vanny coming back. And the intrigue of seeing it is between these two guys, right? With have so much history. So the chance of seeing them together in this new iteration was what was kind of what was promised when Zlatan left, and then suddenly Chicharito arrived, and we've had to sort of like hit false starts on that a bunch of times, but this seems like maybe the first opportunity for it. So you hope he's back this week, but I don't know. It's going to be – that's one to watch.
You guarantee for El Tráfico, you guarantee Legette's back, served a two-game suspension. That's a huge return for the Galaxy. He can play in a few different spots. Julian Araujo's not a winger. So it could be there. You could slide someone else out wide and move Legette inside, whatever it is. That's a huge piece for the LA Galaxy to get back for this game. So that makes them, I think, no matter what, a little bit better going into this LAFC matchup. And I think there's a level of confidence for the Galaxy, even after the Seattle loss, of like, we're different than we were last year. This is our city. This is what this game means to us. And you've seen a few weeks in, smaller crowds, but the atmosphere at both those stadiums has been awesome. And it really has changed the effect of games at the bank in Carson. And so for these clubs, I think this, as Kalen said, we've had the stop start of like, when are we going to get this one? And I think it's going to feel that like that big moment.
Yeah, I think it's the establishment of sort of this new iteration of El Tráfico. And hopefully Vela's back. We'll be watching, of course, all the different news sources around LA to see whether or not he does get back in time.
You think Greg Vanney shows up in a bomber jacket? Just
I would be here for that.
Just to see what happens.
I haven't seen him in.
No, he's got
to
go.
Scarf. I was going to say, I haven't seen him in many scarves recently. I mean, the LA.
He wore a T-shirt week one in Miami. Apparently, it was a bit of a big deal out in LA. People had takes.
Anyway, El Tráfico on Fox Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern. There's some other big games this weekend on national TV. There's an ABC doubleheader, Inter-Miami and Atlanta, Portland and Seattle. That's at, it's 8 p.m. Eastern on El Tráfico, Central Time, Eastern Time.
I was literally checking the score. It's been
throwing me off from season one of the season. Like, I love that the new MLSsoccer.com adapts it to where I am, but I'm also so Eastern Time centric from a decade in New York that I haven't been able to break that habit. You said something interesting, though, Kalen, about Carlos Vela knowing his own body. I just have to ask you this because I'm curious. Phil Neville said Robbie Robinson doesn't know his own body, that he's a young man who
he's learning
about his own body. What does it mean to know your own body, and can you not know it as a young player?
And I'm currently playing this game myself. I mean, men's league, had a horrible injury, stretching for a ball, hamstring, and it's the exact same spot that happened June 12th, 2012 against FC Dallas, same injury. It never left me. So I'm still learning. Yeah, it's a hazard. I have no idea what that means that he's learning. I guess they have like Carlos Vela. I guess Carlos Vela knows when he's injured. He knows when he's not. I guess maybe if you're a young guy and you got a lot of different inputs in. So you're trying to decide, yes, I need to play. Higuain's gone. This is my opportunity, but I'm not feeling right, but I don't know. So he goes out and they did a pre-match test. It sounded like he went in and actually like spoke to the manager and said, I want to play, which is a great sign to hear from a young player. Looked good when he got on. So, yeah, I don't know. But he's still – I mean, Robinson, he also had some – like last year, right? He had some family issues as well too. So I think he's kind of still finding his footing. It's not easy as a young player, especially at a club with expectations there, first draft pick. There is an emotional human side to figuring out your way through professional soccer. So, I don't know. I'm hoping for the best one.
Yeah. Phil Neville was on fire post game. He said that. He also said he agreed with the, dog so that wasn't a red so in that Nashville Inter Miami game, which is a fitting thing to say for someone who starts, LGP and Ryan Shawcross. I'd be like, nothing's dog so. The dog so doesn't even, nobody knows what dog so is. Just don't call it. Reckless.
By the way, first question from Sky today on Shawcross.
No. We forgot that was supposed to be our Monday bit. We were supposed to do what did Sky ask?
We should all have to guess, right?
I don't think anybody would have guessed Shawcross.
Always guess Shawcross. Always.
Oh, man. In the narrative fun zone, we have two more here. One is, hey, the Revs are good. The other one is, yes, FC Cincy are in fact quite bad. They remain bad. Yopstam says we're sticking with it. We're sticking with the plan.
You're going to go with that first.
What?
The Revs are good, and you're going to go first with FC Cincinnati being bad.
No, they just came together because one was good and one was bad. So I just tried to loop them in together because we still need to get to, like, you know, 2222 and CCL previews.
Okay, I'm just saying, you said both them, and then your immediate response was, let me trash on FC Cincinnati. Yopstam said this and move that way. Rather than being like, oh, good on the Revs.
It's been a long time, really it's been a long time since the March. What about the Revs? Yeah. What about the Revs?
The Revs are good. It's great. They've got two good fullbacks. They look comfortable in central center back. Heel, I think this was his best game of the season, was able to dictate the game, was active with the attacking pieces they have. He's allowed to find the game wherever he wants because other people can swap in and out with him. And Maciel, who is the first ever Revs 2 player to play for the Revs, I had heard that they liked him a lot in preseason, and he would have been a starter week one if he had been healthy. And he had a good week here against Atlanta. Atlanta was not dangerous at any point except for the penalty kick, which also wasn't really a dangerous moment. So this was a really good performance for the Revs. And when they're bad, they're good enough to win. And when they're good enough to beat anyone in MLS. And I would say they have enough pieces that they can do that week in and week out without having everyone healthy. I don't know how Gustavo Bo fits into this team. He's a DP, and they're still good enough to pretty much dominate Atlanta at home.
It's interesting with the Revs, because I do think that their best look against good teams is probably going to be the 4-2-3-1, which is what they played this weekend with Heel inside as a true number 10. The problem with that is that Books is, he's not an elite center forward in this league. He does a lot of good things. He doesn't finish. And the wingers aren't super dangerous goal scorers themselves. So New England's upside is lower because they don't have guys who are just ruthless about putting the ball into the back of the net. Gustavo Bo is. Like, he can be a 15-20 goal scorer in this league. The problem is there's no place for him in a 4-2-3-1. Yeah, I'll basically have to play a 4-4-2 with Heel on the right side, kind of as an inverted playmaker. And Bo, he's just going to float as a second forward and look to score bangers. And he's great at it when the Revs are in control of the game. But when the Revs come up against a team like Columbus that rips control of the game from them, they are unable to even get the ball to Gustavo Bo. So they Bruce Arena has to figure this out, because either way the Revs are going to be very good, but there's not a clear path for them, I think, to the very top of the table because of these fit and goal scoring issues. Now if Teal Bunbury or Tajon Buchanan, if these guys suddenly get on a heater, start scoring a goal every other game, everything changes, and you're just like, okay, we're going to the 4-2-3-1.
I think you've seen from Tajon this year, even though he didn't score the goals, including Olympic qualifying, but an intent to get in the box, especially when the attack goes down the left side, of being an option. So I think that's a possibility that he could scale to being that player. This was always going to ride on Buxa and Bo to an extent, right? Because everything else is kind of a guarantee. And those are the question marks, and they're high price question marks, especially in a league where you can't really waste DP spots.
Revs are atop the table in the East. They're not atop the Supporters Shield. That's the Sounders on goal differential. FC Cincinnati, we won't spend any time on that. I'm sorry for the slag there, Cincy fans. You know, just...
I mean, you can talk about it.
Look, we could just rewatch. We can rewatch Yuya Kubo just getting turned inside out by Nani at the top of the box, and that's a pretty, it's a pretty good indication of where they're at.
They've taken one of the last 24 points on offer. In their last 15 games, they are 1 win, 13 losses, and 1 draw, and they've scored 6 goals.
Well, that about says it there. Our 2222 player of the weekend is 100,000% Cade Cowell. There's a lot of other options here. Caden Clark, he got another golazo. That's just what he does. Dante Sealy, like father, like son, got on the board for FC Dallas in a big win against Portland. Tanner Tessman was in that game playing pretty well as well. You liked Moses Nyman, Dave. Paxton Pomykal is back, but come on, Cade Cowell.
Ricardo Pepi got a start.
Yeah, Ricardo Pepi did get that start. I mean, a goal and two assists.
His hold up play looked really good.
A goal and two assists for Cade Cowell. Doyle did he waxed poetic on the outside of the boot pass last week. I mean, this week
none of these are as impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he made Frédéric Briant looked like a fence post.
Speaking of hamstrings.
I mean, good God. He made Frédéric Briant had three steps on that breakaway goal, and Briant just knew from the moment Cade Cowell started running at what looked like a fairly leisurely pace for Cade Cowell that he was going to be staring at the back of Jersey very, very soon. And then the nice near post finish, and then two great balls to get a couple of assists. I mean, he just has vibes too. He's the youngest starter in the league. He's got like the, he almost looks, it's almost like, you know, I've had a lot of things go through my head, like Rufio hair, so much volume, like the pushback, a little bit of bleach in there. He's got the dangly earring.
He's kind of the perfect player for Almeida too, and his system with just the way, because my question was always, when you go to this one-on-one sort of defensive setup, and then also you're betting a lot on individual talent or difference makers. And I've always thought that that's not going to be a place where San Jose is going to be on the right side of those margins, because you're eventually going to run up with situation, with all due respect to Tommy Thompson, but you're going to find him one-on-one with Carlos Vela or somebody, and you're going to isolate your defenders and put them in tough spots. And for some players, I think like Judson, he's a perfect example of a guy that can go up and down and all around the pitch. It works. But I think
It's the two C's, Cade, man.
Yeah, so it's all my CCs. Yeah. You know, I'm glad to see the next generation coming along.
Wow, we didn't realize the dropped it. Just bump up.
But like, he's a perfect example of an he's a matchup nightmare. I mean, I think it's basically a hopeful sort of, it's a really nice ball, but it is a hopeful ball that most players maybe you try and track down or you put some pressure on. But he's got the speed to not just beat Briant, but take that next touch. He almost accelerates when he gets the touch, takes a nice angle towards goal and finishes. So he's shown a lot, you know, different parts of his game that we haven't seen, and composure as well in the finish. So I think if you want to rewind and listen to Doyle talk about the pass trademark from last week, you can. But I think he's a perfect part of this system and the way Almeida wants to play.
And not a player they've had, right? Because they've had other forwards. Hosen didn't do it. Andy Rios didn't do it. Wando can't do that anymore, or if ever. And then the other one is the first goal is Lachofi's just moment of brilliance. Now, Tony Alfaro can't close down because maybe he should play center back for FC Cincinnati. But it's still those two aspects of this game didn't exist for San Jose the last 2 years. So they put up a stat, which is they hadn't beat DC in like 5 years, and they were like 0-3-3 at home against them or something like that. And this game kind of showed you, I'd say in the run of play, there wasn't all that much of a difference for a lot of times, but they had a moment of brilliance and Cowell speed that put them up 2-0 and allowed them to play from the lead and be the better team and dictate the way the game was going to be played. And that's something they just haven't had the last
few years. God the net was there to stop that Jackson Ewell shot. Because if somebody was standing by that,
because Chris Seitz was not going to. They were like, what was that?
I mean, that was an incredible piece of technique.
Got all like, that one.
Falling, side volley. I mean, it was just a straight-up laser beam. But Cade Cowell...
Frozen rope, Weeby. Go back
frozen
to
rope. Yeah, you're right. You're right. What? So then when David Ochoa hit a can of corn up into the Loon supporter section, is that where we're...
Didn't know that we're gonna, one.
People in Minnesota know about cans of corn, let me tell you. Both for consumption and also for the Twins. What is the Cade Cowell hope for the rest of the year here? Like, this is... We've hit some high points. Quick. Like, what, what now?
So our guy Tommy Scoops had a good little feature on him last week on MLSsoccer.com. Almeida
is this where he said he wants to be a combination of Neymar and Mbappe.
Oh, and I fainted.
Yeah, he's aiming his lights. It's like,
that's what I'm saying. His vibes are just blowing everyone's out of the water.
Yeah.
Like he's got the dangly cross earring and he's saying he wants to be a combination of Neymar and Mbappe. What?
He looks like he's from the Lost Boys. Old people will get that reference. So the thing in that feature Almeida talks about is like every physical test we do, Cade is the number one player on the team, including jumping, but he hasn't been able to head a ball in MLS. That's technique. He has to work on his technique. He knows that. So we've seen him add pieces to his game, right? Like last year, he was very linear. He was a better passer than I thought. And then this year we've seen him hit some passes that are stunning. He's still a goal scorer, but now we need to see him. Okay, can he add the technique to beat guys off the dribble? Because he doesn't do that. Can he add the technique to be a dangerous header of the ball? It's tough. Yeah, like I think a lot of that is inherent, but we've seen players, really good goal scorers in MLS, develop that over the year. Mauro Manotas, in his first 2 years, he couldn't head a ball. It was ridiculous. By his fourth year, I think he scored 5 headed goals. So this is the process for any young player. You have to get better. And from everything that the kid has said and kind of shown, and everything that Almeida said, they know exactly how he needs to get better, and they have a plan for doing that. I don't know if it means long-term he's going to be Kylian Mbappe. I will say he's not going to be Neymar, but he certainly looks the part of a super dangerous player where it's like, by age 19, it wouldn't shock me if he was as good as Jordan Morris was last year. And that's really damn good.
Anders title, Matt Doyle says, Cade Cowell will play for PSG. He will be the whole team one day.
We've given Cade Cowell a ton of love, which is well-deserved. But that's partly why I'm still taking Caden Clark. As you know, I know we're not rating the 22 under 22 or whatever it is, but like the technique there, and we've been able to see it repeated time and time again in the box and around it. I think, you know, he continues to shine. Another huge, big future for him. So, you know, he's stepped up in a big way. So it's been a good year for the CCs.
I'm still interested to see how Gerhard Struber sort of forms this roster and figures it out and understands where his players best fit. I'm still thinking he's figuring that out on the fly right now, but to get a result this weekend, that's good stuff for them. We got to get to CCL. Leg 2 coming this week here in the quarterfinals, Tuesday and Wednesday. On Tuesday, Union up 3-0 on Atlanta United. They don't have Jose Martinez, who they also don't have an MLS play because he went crazy and karate chopped Tati Castellanos in the side of the face, like with his elbow. It was just a really ugly moment. From this weekend, 10-15, Cruz Azul up 3-1 on Toronto FC. And then on Wednesday, Monterrey, it's 2-2 with Columbus Crew SC. Like, I think that was the last thing I watched when I was really feeling sick. And I just had that final goal is so painful still to me. America and the Timbers at 1-1. Who's getting through? I mean, we saying Philly are through? Are we going to curse them like that?
Philly are through, nobody else.
That's what you...
I disagree.
Okay, explain why.
I think Philly are through. I still do. I have to pick one, or can
no,
I?
No, if you want to, like, you know, if you want to weasel around and.
Yeah, I still think that between Portland and Columbus, one of those teams will get through. Warm Gore came back, played a good stretch this weekend, so maybe you can start him if Mensah can't go. Although apparently Giassi Zardes dislocated his shoulder during the Monterrey game. Played
another
35
minutes. Yeah.
With the dislocated shoulder and is now day to day. So, Giassi Zardes.
What's more impressive, that or Chicharito's foot?
Look, he really got stepped on hard. All right, that was, you know, that was one that you like wins. You're like, ooh, and then it just sticks with you. The next day, you're walking down the stairs.
I know you dislocated your shoulder, but have you ever been?
But listen,
stepped
shoulders,
on?
Shoulders pop back in. They pop back in.
Howard Webb woke up this morning and had 18 emails from Weeby about changing the rules in MLS.
So are we sure that's not violent conduct on Neymar? Are we sure? Do we know that? Do we know he didn't
gotta
do that
protect
on purpose?
Your stars.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So I still think, even without Zelarayan, which is tough, I still think that this is a Columbus group that has enough ways to create opportunities, and I think they'll have the bulk of possession even at Monterrey. And then I look at Portland. Obobese comes off the bench for a few minutes this week. They played Timber C team against Dallas, which makes sense because of what they want to do going forward. I still think this is a group that will be comfortable sitting in a low block and trying to hit on the counter against against Club America. So I'm not counting either of those teams out. I feel better about Columbus, but I still think one of those two will go through.
By the way,
I'm taking Portland.
You're taking
I think Portland will go.
Wow.
I'm taking Portland, yeah. I like what they've seen. I like their first leg. I think it was Marathon. Like what they saw, what I saw from that team and that. And then even again, you know, to come back late and to get the result at home, I think was big for them. as far as momentum goes. So I kind of throw out the MLS performances to begin the season. It's just, if you look at across CCL, and I think somebody put out a stat or a tweet, it was just basically all losses. So I'm kind of just throwing that to the side to begin with and saying, I think this Portland team has enough. And now, look, it's a tall task going against Club America, but I don't know. It's a hunch. I'm going for it.
I like it.
I was cautiously pessimistic. I still am, but I'm feeling more optimistic, and I don't know. I'm going to pick
2-2 would be cool. That'd be good stuff. Oh, by the way, NYCFC fans are going to be unhappy with us here. We haven't really talked about them, and they won again. They beat the Union. My mentions on Twitter are filled up with people saying, you know, basically, you guys crow about the Union all the time. We took them down. We dominated them at home. Now, again, 10-man Philadelphia. And what was the stat, Dave? I believe you had it after CCL.
0-4-7 so far, CCL teams the game after CCL.
So 5 set-piece goals on Cincinnati. And then, yeah, it's a good win against Philly. But just hold your horses there, NYCFC fans. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Toronto FC, we didn't talk about. I think most of us think it's an uphill battle. 3-1 at Cruz Azul, but it sounds like they just signed Kamar Lawrence as a starting left back. So now they got depth at right back, and they bring in a guy who's been one of the better left backs in MLS, and makes sense with Soteldo of, okay, you know, Kamar Lawrence can cover that entire wing by himself if you need to. You know, he's solid defensively. It's sort of classic, right? Ali Curtis and Chris Armas bringing in another Red Bull guy. Shout out Danny Royer, soon to be TFC player. But good pickup for them, and they still needed center backs. I don't know. I guess Luke Singh's that guy, which I appreciate, giving him that opportunity, but TFC continues to get better.
Where's the Danny Royer trade scuttlebutt coming from? Can I just ask you that?
He hasn't started a game, and there was rumors, not me, there was rumors that he's been shopped around MLS going into week one.
Not rumors. Like, he was shopped.
Yeah.
All offseason, he was shopped around MLS.
And so if he's not a starter, he's one of the highest paid players on the team. And in my mind, if you put him in a decently cohesive MLS team, you're probably going to get 10 goals from him.
He would have helped Vancouver last night.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Vancouver and Colorado at all. Colorado got a 1-0 win. They were the better team. Vancouver had their chances. They have only one goal scorer on that team, and it's Lucas Cavallini. And so everybody just does what they can to take him out of the game. Royer's not the greatest player in the world, but if you're going to play a 4-4-2 where your secondary forward has to complete some passes and get in dangerous spots and finish plays off, like, Royer would help a team like that.
I think he makes a lot of sense there. I think he makes a lot of sense for Houston to get some goal scoring on from one of those wings, and he'll feel comfortable pressing the way Tab wants. I think most MLS teams could use him. We talked about KC.
Yeah, I was just going to say KC.
Polito creating chances for a guy coming off the wing. I don't know if they have the cap space and money. So, that's the scuttlebutt right there.
Andrew. Somebody get Danny Royer is what you're saying. Quick update on MLSers abroad. Brennan Aronson scored in a cup final, lifted a cup. Jesse Marsh, you guys talked about that on Thursday, headed to RB Leipzig. I need to get your thoughts on that, Doyle. I just want to hear what you think about this moment, because I'm still sort of – I mean, the trajectory was there. We kind of understood where this was probably going for Jesse, but it's still so thrilling and unusual and amazing to me to see an American coach be the logical choice for a team at the top of and probably planted at the top of the Bundesliga and is going to be in the Champions League year in, year out.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic for Jesse, and it's definitely a path that he started carving for himself when he worked with us at MLSsoccer.com in the summer of 2014.
Well, to be fair, Adrian Heath can thank us for that Minnesota job as well.
That's true. We're the launching pad. He'll be the third American to manage in the Bundesliga, David Wagner at Schalke, and the fella whose name I'm
Pellegrino Matarazzo.
Yeah, Pellegrino Matarazzo this year, and Jesse is the first to do it really from MLS as kind of a lifer, as a player in MLS, and then the coaching path through the league and to a Champions League team, winning trophies in Austria. And now, as you said, Weeby, the very clear and obvious choice to take over in Leipzig. I'm not going to bet against him. I think the man knows how to win. And as for the first point you made about, winning trophies in Europe, our good friend Paul Kennedy over at Soccer America put this tweet out. Americans in Europe could play for week 50 years and not have as good a cup season as we've seen this year. Sergiño Dest won the Copa del Rey in Spain. Mark McKenzie won the cup in Belgium. Zach Steffen won the League Cup in England. Aronson won the cup in Austria. Ben Letterman, remember him? Remember that name? He won the cup in Poland yesterday. And then about 10 days from now, Haji Wright in Denmark, Tyler Adams versus Gio Reyna in Germany. Pulisic is in the FA Cup final on the 15th. Weston McKennie in the Italian Cup final on the 18th. And then Ian Harkes and Dylan Powers next week in the semifinals. And Scott, it's incredible the amount of trophies that we're seeing Americans abroad collect in Europe this year.
And Doyle will be doing a 2-hour Twitter Spaces shoulder programming around that Scottish Cup final.
I am interested to see if this will, I'm not speculating on either of these managers' jobs because I know NYCFC and Red Bulls have head coaches, but the idea of a manager going to this system to be able to get basically FaceTime, because while I thought Jesse did a fantastic job in MLS, clearly being a part of the Red Bull family and system is what opened this pathway for him. And you're starting to see players, whether it's Caden Clark or Frankie Amaya, there's sort of an inertia where you're seeing, or even at FC Dallas, how they keep bringing more, because you know if you go to that academy, there's a good chance, there's the relationship with Bayern. So I do wonder if it will sort of make those types of roles more interesting for managers, especially American managers of profile, to try and take it to get a chance if they do have that ambition to go abroad.
Wasn't that Jason Kreis going to NYCFC? Yeah. Even though it was quote unquote a bigger market in MLS, the push was he got to go live in Manchester for a year, and then that's your connection and that's your background, which no MLS coach had ever had before. Didn't work out for him.
Sure.
But I think that's part of the point, because what's amazing about this is that Jesse Marsh is an MLS lifer. Greg Vanney played in France. Comfortable. Like, we saw Greg Berhalter go to Europe, played in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's most shocking about this, is that Jesse Marsh is a pure MLS guy that's now getting this opportunity in Europe. But, of course, the Red Bull connection makes it
former possible. Former Chivas USA legend, Jesse Marsh.
Oh, don't do that. Chicago Fire, baby. Come on.
I mean, I'm only thinking about the battle with Beckham. I'm the face up there, the stripes. It was a beautiful moment. All right, 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Let's hit the mailbag before we get out of here. Dave, what do we got?
Ryan from Juarez says, we've seen a lot of players' careers extended or resurrected with a position change, i.e. Beasley and Zusi as fullbacks. Early on this season, I would say the same thing is happening to Will Bruin as a second drop-back forward. Also, it seems there's a resurgence of the two-forward system as well. Shout out to Will Bruin.
Bruin's always been able to do that. Like, he's always... His passing vision is really, really good. He has good instincts for linking play. I thought his big issue is he doesn't have great balance. So you can kind of knock him off the ball if you get into him. And that was always the limiting factor with Bruin as sort of a hold up man that guys can run off of. As for the two forward system, whether it's a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2 flat or 4-4-2 diamond, you're right. There's a resurgence of it, and it goes hand-in-hand with transition soccer. With a two-forward system, you are always going to have two guys in good positions upfield when you win the ball in central midfield, and that puts a ton of pressure on the opposing back lines. So it's just a natural outgrowth of this global shift towards transition soccer that we're seeing basically everywhere, but coming to MLS certainly with teams like Philadelphia, what Chris Armas is doing in Toronto, and of course the Red Bulls as well.
Chase in Oregon says, is there an extra time award for Entertainer of the Year yet? Is it possible to make a case that it should be given to anyone not named Nuhu? He provides more excitement and unpredictability and zest per 90 minutes than anyone in the league.
This is Adrian Heath erasure. Adrian Heath is a content machine.
That's true.
He's a content machine.
That's true. We can thank him. I mean, we've ridden the whole real estate agents, MLS.com, now all the stuff with the ball kicking. We truly have gotten the most out of Adrian Heath. And part of what makes Nuhu special this year is that there aren't all those moments of unpredictability. He's not making the crazy run upfield.
He's been
been an incredible, don't come in my area or I'm taking the ball from you, defender.
I think he got the assist.
Yeah, he's super clean on the ball right now. I mean, he's a great player.
Yeah, that was a great pass.
He's just a really good player.
Also, apparently after this last win, he gets extra teriyaki chicken on his order. So shout out to Nuhu.
Wait, I don't understand that.
Someone tagged us in Sounders, put out a video of him literally walking off the field and someone said good win. And he goes, this means I get extra teriyaki chicken with my rice bowl, which is
fair
because that's a great meal. Let me close you on this one. Andrew from Winnemucca, who says, well, staying at the top of the Western Conference as a Quakes fan was nice while it lasted. Also, forgive me for not buying Cade Cowell stonks before they went nuts. I should have listened.
Where do we think Winnemucca is? What's your...
Definitely Minnesota.
You think so?
Yeah, I was thinking Minnesota or Canada. I was surprised this guy's a Quakes fan.
Yeah, you're looking
at Google Maps right now, aren't you, David?
Yeah, I love Google Maps. It's my favorite thing to do in the world.
Me too.
It's not even coming up for me with...
Nevada.
Winner. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Is it a city in Nevada?
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Andres is slagging us. He said, it's a small place, man. Humboldt County, Nevada. It's about census figure 7,000. So Andrew and Winnemucca is... We appreciate you, man. We love you. All right. Let us know if you have any thoughts.
It's not near Lake Tahoe because it's not near anything.
He's just isolated out there, just mainlining Cade Cowell and Mateus Almeida. Total insanity football. All right. That's it for us. I hope you enjoyed week three. Big week coming here. A couple games in CCL. Trying to get a couple teams, we hope, through the semifinals. And then a big weekend in MLS. Bunch of games on national TV. Full coverage. MLSsoccer.com. If you don't already, please hit the subscribe button. On Extra Time, driven by Continental. And if you see something over the weekend for your celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire, tweet at us at Extra Time. That's it for us. Enjoy your week. We'll see you Thursday.